Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
I came into comms about 4 years ago. It was a 26 company business covering everything from telco to infrastructure to IT. We even had a video animation company in the group. What I discovered quite quickly, I went in there as chairman, is that we had a bit of a renegade CEO. It culminated in a big bust up in early 2014. That CEO left the business, at which point we were left with a complete mess. We spent probably the last 3 years restructuring that business. We sold or closed anything that was loss making or we didn't want to be in. And we were actually left with a business called Redstone, at which point we rebranded ourselves as Redstone Connect. And when we were looking at the Redstone business, which was an IT infrastructure business and managed services, which I'll tell you more about in just a second, we discovered a bit of technology some of the guys in the business had created, which would actually help a business called UBM to run their flexible desks or hot desking within their building. And what they wanted was people to come in, be able to identify the free desks and then allocate those desks to those people and free them up when they left. We thought that was really interesting. I come from a software background. Mark, who was the CEO at the time, he came from that end of the market. And we realized we actually had something something that was scalable and something that could offer us the potential for SaaS revenue, could offer us the potential for sort of higher margin services. We went off and bought a business called Connect, because at that point we only had one and a half developers in the business, so not exactly a scalable technology organization. We bought a business called Connect, which actually came from the retail and hospitality space. They've implemented technologies over at Westfield and over at GSK, and not far from here actually. They came with about 25 developers, and that formed the kernel of the business over the last few years. Business was up to, we got it making money again, and turnover is up to 47 million. But 40 million of that turnover came from Redstone. Now, Redstone is a name you might be familiar with. It was a telco business years ago. They built up quite a large infrastructure business. We had some good clients, we had people like Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan and that. But a lot of the work that we did was actually project-based. It was low margin, and it was one-off. So once you finished the project, you had to go off and find another one. We actually did the fit out over at the UBS building in Broadgate. So we did the wire, the cabling and infrastructure in that building. Currently, the new owners of this business, because we sold it back in June of this year, they're finishing out on the Goldman Sachs headquarters in Farringdon Road, for example, is one of their projects. The problem with that business, though, is it's not really a business for the public market. Very little visibility on revenues, as I say, and low margin. And a high dependency on a small number of customers. The other thing that it lacked as well, though, was actually a mentality to run a software business. And an illustration of that is that we had a sales guy who more or less lived at UBS. It was a big project for us. It was brought in £4 or £5 million, I think, over a couple of years. And in the time we were in there, that sales guy never mentioned that we actually had a piece of desk management software, despite the guys at UBS mentioning to the sales guy that actually we're looking for a piece of desk management software. So therein lies sort of, if anything, illustrated for me really what we had to do to change the business. We had to change the mentality. Mark Brond, who was then the CEO, who was very busy with the restructuring of the whole group at the time, acknowledged that. He went and told UBS that we had a bit of space desk management software, and we sold our system in there, and a large customer now. We managed about 10,000 desks for UBS, not just in London. We also managed it abroad as well. It was very apparent that we had to do something with the Redstone business, and we finally made the decision last year is in good enough state to sell it. And we entered into a process at the end of last year, which culminated in the disposal at the end of June this year. We ended up, I remember sitting in a meeting actually this time last year with some advisors, and they were saying to us about, look, you should really get rid of this business because it's going to act as an anchor in your value no matter what you do on the software side. Unless you get shot at this business, you don't have a chance. And I asked in passing what kind of value would I put on that business, and one of them sort of glibly said, oh, if I had 6 million, I'd take it tomorrow and I'd put it into the core business, the software business. We held out and we got 21.6 in the deal that we did eventually. And the plan now is to use that money. we paid down some debt and a few other bits, but what was left then to actually start to build us a credible software business. At that point, we parted company with Mark Brond. Mark did an amazing job through the restructuring. He didn't come from a software background. We looked in the market for a CEO and we had two challenges, finding someone at the right price and finding someone who was relatively available relatively quickly. And in the end, we couldn't find somebody. We had a discussion internally and I went and I had a chat with the real boss, which is my wife. And I told her in 2011 I was never going to go and work full time again. And I went home and I posed the question very subtly from behind the sofa. She said yes. She could see how passionate I was. She could see how it tied into to my history as running a software business as well as doing this. I'm also chairman over at Dot Digital Group, so I'm fairly familiar with SaaS businesses. And she knew that we had to do something here. The other thing, of course, what it gave us was timing. We could have found someone really good as a CEO, but it might have been on 6 months' notice, another 6 months to get into the business. So we made a big change in July then. I went down as CEO. Guy, who's here, stepped up as chairman. And Mark left the business. We rebranded from Redstone Connect to SmartSpace Software, and we're now a 100% software business, albeit a lot smaller. We're anticipated to do £7 million this year, so we're nothing like what we were before, but what we have is a very credible software business. Basically, what we do is the legacy of our business is in retail and hospitality. So if you have ever been into the premium parking section of Westfield, it's our technology actually opens the barriers and lets you in and wayfinds you down into the shopping centre. If you go to Milton Keynes next month, it's actually our technology will take you from the car park, and if you download the app, we'll give you all the offers and things like that. In hospitality, if you bought a ticket to the Rugby World Cup the last time it happened, that actually came off a Connect platform. Now, both of those bits of business for us, they're profitable and we have very little resource tied up in them. We've got only a couple of people on the hospitality side of the business, so it's not like we've got a huge number of employees involved in them. We're not going to kill them, but we're not going to major on them going forward. Our main focus is actually workplace. And as you saw from that video, what we want to do is to help companies to manage and maximise their commercial real estate. Now, what that means in reality is to help them to do everything to manage the entire journey within the business, just like that video illustrated, whether that's managing visitors efficiently, managing meeting rooms, managing desks or whatever. But the whole idea is we're the only people in the market who can give you a fully integrated suite. Now, we work in a market that's broadly known as IWMS, which is Integrated Workplace Management Systems. It's been around for years, but in the past, it was the domain of facilities management. It was never exposed to employees. They would have used it to manage leases and manage maintenance and things like that. Now, there's an interesting segment within the IWMS market, which is the bit that we're into, which is the bit that's really burst out of the woods, as it were, in the last few years, and that's space management. Now, there's a few people who research the market. One of them is a business called Memori. They reckon the space management and analytics market was worth $1.4 billion last year, and they reckon it's going to be worth about $4.6 billion in 2022. And they're looking at, they're estimating compound growth of about 25%. And you've probably experienced it yourself in your businesses. If you take, for example, in London right now, a typical desk costs £28,000 a year to run. Now, in the case of UBM, one of those clients I mentioned earlier, when they took our software, they were planning to take three floors in their new building in Blackfriars. They ended up only taking two floors. And they set us a target originally of getting an average of 1.4 per employees per desk. We've now achieved 1.8 employees per desk. And that's all that is when if you're in a sort of flexible work environment, you look around and see, is there any desks available? Not realizing that there's actually 10 desks in the cluster around the corner, you didn't even realize we're there. And what we're trying to do then is to help companies surface that. The same happens then with things like meeting rooms. And the same happens, for example, when it comes to wayfinding. So if you go to the GSK campus across the road here, and you log in as a visitor, it's actually our software will guide you to the right building and the right floor and let you know exactly who to see and where you can access facilities and that. Okay, so what we try and do really is bring all of that together. The ultimate manifestation is what was in that employee's hand. Our ultimate aim is to be the business where we connect the employee with their organisation. And because of the app that we deploy, if you're using it to book a meeting room, you're using it to check in your guests, you're using it to book your own desk. Why can't you use it to book a cab home if you're working late that night and the preferred provider is Addison Lee? Why can't you use it to check the weather? And if we can pull that off, we've got ourselves a very, very credible business going forward. Type of customers we work with, I mentioned some of the names there, the STH, who actually have the hospitality contracts for the World Cup. We're just deploying in Centre Milton Keynes at the moment. We've also rolling out a project for THRE in Munich. But on the workplace side, we've obviously got UBM and we've got UBS. And we predominantly operate at two levels in the market. One is enterprise. Now, with enterprise, typically what will happen is the client will pay us a license to get access to the platform. And then they pay us an ongoing usage fee. And that's based on a price per desk, a price per meeting room or whatever. And then they pay us separately for the services to get it all up and running, because invariably they'll actually want a lot of configuration done. Now, the challenge with that, and it was highlighted by one of the institutional investors we met last year when we described some of the contracts we're working on, he says, you're not taking me from a spiky projects IT business to a spiky software business. And our aim ultimately is not to be dependent on the enterprise market. Now, and we're also active in the mid-market, so LEK down there, that's a deployment here in London. It's purely SaaS, and it's worth about £40,000 a year, and it's a three-year contract. So that's an example of a mid-market product or a mid-market deployment. If you go back to the enterprise ones, the license could be anything from a few hundred thousand to a few million, and the ongoing SaaS revenue could be significant, hundreds of thousands and above every year from those businesses once we get fully deployed. So big, big contracts. But as I say, the challenge with it always is that with the enterprise customers is how you actually, how you can give visibility of revenue and how we become less dependent on them. So you'll see in a second how we've sort of changed our underlying strategy to sort of mitigate that that risk. Say we made a lot of changes since the summer. One of the first things we've done is actually had a major reshuffle at the senior management team. So we've got an ops board now. We brought in someone who's driving sales, whom we moved from another part of the business. We've recruited a new CTO. He started about a month ago, doing a really good job. And we've put someone now into sort of scale or services organizations to reflect the kind of business that we want to be. Say, numbers, say we're going to be a small business. The market is expecting us to be sort of about £7 million this year. And without acquisitions, we think we can grow at a steady pace, 20-30% per annum over the next few years. We do plan to accelerate that with acquisitions, and we've already started on that journey. Now, there was three things that are driving my acquisition strategy. The first one was to bulk us up. We need to be bigger than what we are. And what we're looking at is target companies where they're actually in the same market as us, but maybe their technology is a little bit outdated. And if we were to buy their business and overlay our technology, we'd grow our revenues quite quickly and we'd grow our customer base quite extensively and possibly give us increased geographical reach. We've identified a couple of weaknesses in our product suite. So that was the second sort of cornerstone of our acquisition strategy. One of them was in visitor management. We did visitor management, but we didn't do it on a rapid deployment approach. Everything was configured for each customer. And we also wanted to improve our analytics side of our offering. So again, we started to look at targets in that space. And the last bit, I think, is quite an important one. And it comes back to this point I was making about the about not being dependent on small numbers of big, big contracts. And I'm really keen for us to be active at the entry level of the market. And by entry level, I don't necessarily mean small businesses. There'll be a lot of businesses that we'll pitch our offering to, and they're not prepared to pay us £3,000, £4,000, £5,000, £10,000 a month for our technology. But if we had an offering that actually came in at hundreds of pounds per month, they would say yes straight away. And there's no one actually going after that market in a concerted effort right now. And it also has the added benefit of giving us protection against the competition. So we made our first acquisition in... we completed this in October, and so basically, SwipeDon is a visitor management solution. It's based in New Zealand, so as convenient it is for me to get to Luton from where I live down in Bromley, so marginally so. But we didn't automatically just go to New Zealand because it was in New Zealand. There was a few targets that we looked at. The one I really wanted to buy was a business called ProxyClick. It's based over in Belgium. The challenge with that was twofold. One is that the boss, the CEO there, wanted to dance with us for a year, which didn't fit with our timelines to get on with things. And secondly, he'd raised some money earlier this year on a valuation of 10 million euros for a business that was turning over about about a million or a million and a half euros. So didn't represent a great deal. But the bottom line is that we weren't going to buy at that price. We found a couple of businesses here in the UK. There was one not far from us in Luton. But the challenge once we looked into it is they only had 600 customers. Their platform would need to have been rewritten. They hadn't gone into any overseas markets such as the US or anything like that. And and they basically didn't have a team of substance. They had three people in the business driving the technology. But they thought their business was worth £5 million. So we said no thanks to that one as well. And so we searched. We obviously did the rounds in the US. And we came across this business in New Zealand called Swiped On. They've got 19 staff. When we engaged with them, they had just over 2,000 customers. As of this morning, they now have 2,443. So now the beauty of this business, of course, is that we end up with those customers who use our technology across about 3,500 locations around the globe. But the business, if they lose 50 customers this month, it hardly makes a dent on the numbers. It gives us a great robustness in terms of visibility. They will do about 1.4 million of ARR next year, so annual recurring revenue, which is a big metric on the SaaS, in the SaaS model, and just a great bunch of guys, really. And we're working well with them, really well so far. They've gone into new markets. We've added over 400 customers since we started with them. We've enhanced their marketing spend so they can acquire more. They operate in four markets predominantly. They operate in Australia, the UK, the US, and Canada. But they have customers across about 39 different countries. Now, we're going to do two things with this business. The first thing is to get the growth and customers underway, and that's already started. And the second thing we want to do now is to create a bunch of add-on modules that fit around visitor management. So there's certain things that we do at the top end that are transferable to this end of the market. Now, desk management isn't one of those, because with desk management, you've got to put some sensors on the desk and things like that to get it up and running. But something like meeting room management, car parking management, and courier management, so checking in stuff at desks and things like that. And we've already started work on those. And the plan is by mid-next year is that we'll have those products released. But then we have a captive audience at that point, hopefully of, 2,500 plus customers that we can sell into, and we can increase the ARR and capitalize on the cross-sell and upsell opportunities. What it will do then is give us great protection at the entry level end of the market. So if we're in competition with some of our competitors and we find that they're sort of coming in and trying to lowball us on price, we say, well, we do have an offering at this end. It's called Swiped On. It doesn't have all the functionality that you might want today, but it'll do everything that you want out of the box, and it'll cost you hundreds of pounds per month. And the aim then is to start to take this product into non-English markets. Currently, it only sells in English-speaking markets, and we're looking at that right now. So if we can start to open up non-English-speaking markets, it becomes really, really interesting. The analysis we've done in Germany, for example, is about 400,000 businesses that were coming in the target audience or target market for this solution. And again, there's nothing like a bit of legislation to focus people's minds. And the GDPR legislation, whilst businesses were focused on things like their marketing database and all the other things, most don't actually realise that it also includes visitors. What data did you store on those people? And how long have you stored it for? Who saw that data? And of course, then a paper-based visitor management book doesn't actually wash, because if place goes up in flames, the visitor book is the first thing to go. You have no idea what was in it, and you have no idea when it comes to things like emergency evacuations and that. So the bottom line, really, it's a very exciting business. We don't plan to be a buy and build play. Okay, we want to make three or four target acquisitions that fit within those three pillars that I outlined there a while ago. Once we do that, we stop, we digest, and then we focus on building the business organically. Okay, so, and again, Swiped On is our acquisition at this end of the market. So, bottom line really is we're in a very exciting space, market that's growing not just in the UK but internationally. As a business, I think we're really geared up now and we've got 100% focus. We went from 360 staff down to about 70 staff following the disposal of the Redstone business. We're back up to about 90 staff now when you include the guys from Swipe Don. We've got three operational offices. We don't have an expensive head office anymore. We used to have one in Holborn. That went with the disposal when that happened in June. We now operate from the salubrious locations of Luton, Mildenhall in Suffolk and down in Bristol. So again, it's all about keeping that central overhead really, really tight and putting our energies really into driving the business along. We brought in some great experience in the last 3 months in terms of not just developing software, but deploying it. Because some of these big customers, and hopefully as time goes on, we'll make announcements of various wins that we've got that we'll achieve. We've got to be sure that there's one thing selling the software. We've got to be absolutely sure we can deploy it, especially across borders. Okay, and ultimately, in terms of what makes this business interesting and what keeps Mrs. Beechner's mind focused is that it's all about sticky revenue. Okay, that's where we want to be. We want to be a SaaS business. We're not really interested in sort of license deals. We're not interested in business that's low margin. We really want to focus on the SaaS side of things. And it was interesting because Swipe Don recently, one of their competitors is a business called Envoy in the States. Now, they claim to have 10,000 customers. Bear in mind, we have 2,500 or 2,400. And Envoy did a fundraise last month, and they valued the business at $200 million, which makes me realise, really, that I think we got a good deal in Swipe Don business and a great basis to tackle someone like that who actually is in the market, but actually not, you know, while four times might sound a lot, we feel within our grasp in terms of opening up that number of customers. The ultimate plan for the business is to probably find a home for it. There's no doubt we'll get acquired at some point. The key is to get our business into a state that actually makes that attractive and and where we become part of a bigger organisation. We announced a deal last year. We did a big licensing deal with in the RNS. It said something like an international technology business. It was actually someone in the lighting industry, and they come from Holland, so you don't have to be saying that. I have said to a few people, and I left them scratching their heads, wondering which one it was. So part of my job, really, as CEO, is to bring in some of the skills that I've had from the past, where, you know, invariably, if you do find a home for a business, it doesn't happen where they just come out of the woods and they just buy you. You've got to cultivate a relationship over time. And that was part of the strategy with that Philips deal last year.
I used to work in this space a few years ago now, so I can't pretend to be up to date. But a couple of questions. One, how do you sell? Are you selling direct or are you going through distribution? Yeah. That's one question. Yeah. Because obviously in this space, there's hundreds of firms dealing with all facets of office fit-outs.
Yeah.
And it strikes me as completely logical to sell through distribution.
Yeah.
And the second one is, what plans, the Philips story is obviously interesting, but what plans do you have for integrations with other hardware manufacturers so that you can speed up the adoption of your technology?
Right. Thanks for bringing it up, Francis, because it was one part of the presentation I forgot to talk about, which was this whole sales model. Up to now, we've predominantly sold direct. We'd find a prospect, generally through a process of telemarketing and then getting to see them and then make the pitch and sell to them via the sales guy and then the deployment. But when we started a couple of years ago, one of the options open to us was to actually start to build a channel. Now, I've built a few software channels in my day and they're never easy. I mean, you know, sales in general is, excuse my French, but full of bullshit, right? The guys in channel are actually worse. And the problem with a channel guy, so you understand, and the Pareto rule holds with these guys, you know, you'll get 20% of your sales or 80% of your sales and 20% of the partners. The problem is, though, it's never the same 20% every month. So we decided instead of actually going out and sort of building that channel ourselves directly with all the frustrations it brings, we decided to actually focus on one key partnership that would actually get us into that market. And completely by coincidence, nothing to do with today, we announced this morning that we did a deal with Evoco. Now, Evoco are one of the market leaders in meeting room panels. That was one of their panels on the screen there a while ago. Now, we're actually working with Evoco on two levels. The deal that was announced this morning is to do with their current range of products. It's called Aliso. Now, the Aliso is actually is deployed in 100,000 locations around the globe right now. They've got a few hundred partners, and they've got it. There's about 30 or 40 that we're really interested in. So the first thing it gives us is the names of those guys and the ability to access them. The second thing, though, it gives us is the some sense of whether those partners are effective or not. Because you can talk to a partner, and if I had a pound for every time one of them said, this time next year we'll all be millionaires, what we really need to do is say, how good are these guys? Do they close sales? And we know that they do, because we've actually, one of our first deals coming through on the back of this agreement that we just signed is actually coincidentally with the London Borough of Ealing, and that's for 45 meeting rooms. And the nature of that deal is we get €3 per meeting room per month, as long as they use our software. And the deal we've done there then is to create a separate Evoco branded version of our product. And what that does is takes a business who might have 10 of our panels in the building, and you go to the panel and say, I'm now booking this for the day. It moves it onto the desktop and into an app so that the employees can then book that room remotely. So it suddenly takes what is a dumb terminal and makes it very intelligent. And so that channel is really important to us, and we've actually got great hopes for it. And if I look at the pipeline of stuff coming through already, it's brought us into customers, not just here, but overseas, that we would never have ever got to direct. And I would have probably burned through 3 partners for every one successful one if we built the channel directly. And our architecture is all around open API. So we've got a deal going through now with a big ad agency in New York at the moment, and that involves us integrating with a bit of Cisco kit. We haven't pre-configured that, but it's not going to take us 6 months and tie up 10 devs to make it happen.
Can I ask you a somewhat mundane question about management remuneration, how you retain staff,
yeah,
and how deep that option package goes in the business and the hurdle rates?
Yeah. One of the first things we did in July, once we made the change, is we rolled out an option program across the whole group. So everybody, including the guy who runs the warehouse in Mildenhall, is now on the option scheme. The bottom line is, when you're running a software business, what we're selling ultimately is the intellect of the guys in the business and our ability to turn that into code. We burn it onto a disk or is sitting around in a bunch of electrons in a server farm somewhere. But ultimately, the people are our business. So we wanted to get everybody aligned on that. My option package is based on getting this business to £5 from where we are currently at 90p or whatever. And all the senior management are exactly on the same criteria. So the key really is to keep people aligned. And we built that as well into the deal that we did with the guys down in New Zealand. They took 40% of their consideration in equity. So they've decided to roll quite big. And they had other offers on the table. But they like the vision that we're trying to create and are absolutely adamant that it's an opportunity there. And that plus we nailed our hands to the table as well. But we can talk about that one in public.
Hi, you said there were two strands to in the nature of the relationship with Evoco,
yeah.
And then I think we got sidetracked.
Yeah.
First one was that they've got, I think you said 100,000 implementations around the world at the moment, and then the second strand was...
Yeah, the second strand is actually their next generation of product, which is due out next year. Now, the nature of our relationship with them at that point is going to be slightly different to this one, in that a copy of our software will be burned onto the hardware in the factory before it leaves. And we get paid a flat amount for every one that goes. We're obviously in the process of negotiating all of that now and completing it all, and we'll announce in due course. But very different to the current one, which is we've got to make the sale and get it implemented, and then we start getting paid our €3 per room per month.
Thank you.
The second one is actually significant in the sense in terms of scale and size. But we haven't factored into any of our numbers yet. We're still working through it. But it's it's a key part of the whole relationship.
Naive question. Co-working spaces seem to be just popping up everywhere.
They do, yeah.
Is that a potential integration strategy?
We looked at it once, and not once. We actually looked at it a few times. Concluded in the end, actually, whilst it would be great to have this cradle-to-grave solution where we actually manage co-working space, once we looked into the market is relatively small. The big guys, like WeWork, they've obviously got their own technology already. So what you're after then is the people who want to be WeWork and that. When you look at it, even in the UK, there's about 1,400 potential customers. And when you look at the people in the market, none of them had more than a few hundred customers. So the conclusion we reached, while emotionally it would be great to have it all as part of the whole solution, the conclusion was, we could invest a lot of development effort in it to a market where the overall potential of it was quite limited over time. So we decided to pass on it and focus just on commercial real estate.
That's excellent.
Thank you.
PO World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.